So it is my great pleasure to welcome back, and for the first time, two performers to Many Rivers Books and Tea. Dominic Shaner, as you know, has performed here twice before, and we have absolutely loved his work. This time, we get the pleasure of Amy White joining him. I have heard Amy down at the Diana Center years ago, and so I know what she's capable of, but she has not performed here before. So we get a first performance and a return performance here. Their subject of matter is, of course, Lagrima Mie, the work and suffering of a mystic, that is the mystic Teresa of Avila, who lived in the 16th century, 1515 or something to, I can't remember, 1580 something. And famously, her most famous book is The Interior Castle, which is a description of these states of mystical inward journeying. And so tonight we're going to have a concert which is so perfect for the theme of our store, which is to look at this in music and as well as poetry, as I understand it. Look at this theme and explore some of the related manifestations. So please join me in welcoming Dominic Shaner and Amy White.
Hello, thank you all for coming. So we're going to play two sets of music. Well, I guess more than that, but we're going to have a break between, while I switch instruments from which is an archlute, to the theorbo, which is back there. And we're going to start off with some music from Spain during the 16th century that was actually written for an instrument called the vihuela, which I'll talk about a little bit through the program. It was an instrument that was the result of the Spanish Inquisition at the time. It was an instrument that was changed, its shape was changed to look like the guitar, because the guitar descended from the West, from the Greeks, the kithara. And the reason it was changed, because the lute, as you can probably see, resembles an oud. It developed from the Arabic oud, and so just during the 16th century, as they were converting the mosques into cathedrals, they would take this instrument that looked like this lute that looked like an oud, and kept all the strings the same, changed the body to look like a guitar, that way sort of ridding their culture of the Eastern influences. And the music is very fascinating. Some of it's like steeped in Catholicism, as one would expect during the Inquisition, and then a lot of it is kind of tongue-in-cheek commentary on Catholicism. And what's really fascinating and really telling is this vihuela was only around from about 1530 to 1576, so about 40 years, and then they just went back to playing lutes. And this is the time that Teresa of Avila was around, and we'll be talking about Teresa throughout this Spanish set. But she was herself, she was a Catholic nun, but then suffered a lot at the quote-unquote hands of the church, or the superiors in the Catholic Church. She spent many years in, not really in prison, but kind of secluded, and was sort of...
forced seclusion.
Yeah, hushed. She was a reformist, so we'll talk about that some more. But in the program, you have little descriptions of these texts, which Amy may illuminate further while I tune. Thank you.
Magnificent refuge is inside you. Enter. Shatter the darkness that surrounds the doorway. Step around the poisonous vipers that slither at your feet, attempting to throw you off course. Be bold. Be humble. Put away the incense. Forget the incantations they taught you. Ask no permission from the authorities. Slip away. Close your eyes and follow your breath to the still place that leads to the invisible path leading you home.
I'm
These Spanish lute songs, well, I guess I should start by saying a form of composition that was used very frequently, of course solo music written for the lutes, but also lute and voice was one of the most popular forms of composition, and actually the first surviving published lute book that we have, published in 1506 and 1507, was actually a series of songs for lute and a higher voice. We have some manuscripts that survive earlier than that, so handwritten books that are for solo lute, but it's interesting to note that the first published, or at least the first surviving published work, features the lute with a singer. And this repertoire from Spain is really unique. If we did a concert of like 16th century lute songs, this stuff would really sound out. You have these kind of scales that you heard in this last one of in the lute. You have very dissonant intervals between the counterpoint between the bass of the lute and whatever the melody is. And in Spain, if any of you are familiar with the Spanish history of music, we have Victoria, very famous composers, Gesualdo, Victoria, that were noted for their way that they wrote polyphony. So these multiple voices weaving in and out. That's a good introduction to this next piece by Francesco Canova da Milano, that if you've been to a concert of mine, or the ones here or anywhere, you would always hear a Francesco piece on the program. He's also fascinating. He connects with this kind of religious domineering culture at the time. He worked his entire life in Rome as a servant to the Pope. He was a papal musician, highly regarded, but published a lot of works, but you know, was basically a slave, worked in the courts there. The Pope would travel with him, bring Francesco. Francesco would play throughout Europe. There's writings of him playing with the lute players at the courts of France. And Francesco was given the title, I write it in the program, Il Divino. And the only other individual in history to be given this title was the artist Michelangelo, who himself also worked in the papal court during the about the same time as Francesco. So that's kind of a good, that's just a fascinating little fact to throw out there, because today most of you probably know who Michelangelo is, and not only that, can probably name a handful of his pieces, whereas Francesco is mostly lost to history, except to a few lute players and maybe some guitar players. He wrote music that is based off of vocal pieces. So numbers, so Fantasia 57 and 55 and 79, they're just arbitrary. The numbers don't really mean anything. It's just where they were found in a book of his publications. But what he would do is he'd take little melodies from vocal pieces and weave them into a fantasia, because it's like a fantasy. Could be an improvisation off a melody. So you take any pop tune that you know, and then you just, you know, the lutenist just sits down and writes a contrapuntal multi-voiced piece around it. So what I've done, I've taken a few of these two of Francesco pieces and kind of made a patchwork of them, and adding little connector bits. Another fascinating lute lute history is that Galileo was the son of a lute player and the brother of a lute player, and I make the joke that he didn't have what it took to become a famous lute player like his father and his brother, so he became a brilliant scientist. But his brilliance did come somewhat from his father, because his father, living towards the end of the 16th century, okay, this is probably longer than I wanted to talk, but his father lived towards the end of the 16th century and published at that time about late 1587, 1592, a book of lute music, wherein he says, by this you will have new music by Francesco da Milano that, you know, I found this music, no one else has it, you can buy my book and you can play all this new music by Francesco da Milano. And this is again speaking to Francesco's fame, that he lived till he was about 40, only published a handful of music because he was noted as an improviser. And so this is someone coming along, knowing the kind of fame and the weight of Francesco's name, and decided to publish a book of music, saying that it's by Francesco. But what he's doing is just kind of similar what I'm doing here, is taking little pieces of Francesco's music and then, you know, cutting, pasting, and making a collage and calling it a new piece. But this is the fame of Francesco, and that's why, in some ways, I'm using this instrument. This is an arch lute, given the name because of its neck. And I won't be playing these diapasons much. Anytime I'm playing them, I'm just kind of throwing them in there, because at the time of this music and Spanish music, this instrument was not around. This was invented towards the end of the century, around the same time of Vincenzo Galilei and Michelangelo Galilei. And the reason for the opera is to accompany singers, so you have this extended bass and you can play chords. But the fascinating thing is the lute was such a popular instrument that it would change to meet the needs of the music. So, you know, today we have, like, you can look at the electric guitar and how it's changed and playing styles have changed, but the lute didn't change just over 100 years. This is, you know, the lute came into Europe during the Crusades and part of the Silk trading route even before then. And then came into Europe as a four course, very similar to the oud, play with the pick, and then stayed and then would change as the styles changed. Got it? So this is just one of those changes. And what's fascinating is that Francesco's music, even though the instruments changed and music changed, his music was still being published, was still being written down in manuscripts. So the latest manuscript that survives that features Francesco's music is from 1622 in England. And so that's, you know, over 100 years after his after his death, and less than that, but it's fascinating when you think about how information was disseminated, how kind of secluded these societies and cultures were, and still almost 100 years after his death, his music is being slowly handwritten down in manuscripts. And so here's an amalgamation of Francesco's fantasias. I talked and didn't do the greeting.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the music did. Well, next.
Anyway. You want me to?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I did bring the John of the Cross, but there is another reading that I like a lot that's on the back side. And it's by Marguerite, a French mystic that predates this music like quite a lot. But I'm fascinated with her. I really like her work, and fascinated with what was called the heresy of the free spirit at the time, which she didn't really start, and she didn't call what she was doing a heresy. It was the Catholic Church at the time that deemed it such. But I think that idea of heresy just going, kind of taking whatever the trajectory of thought or whatever the idea of how one should be in a society as either a man or a woman, or even as a nun or a participant in the Catholic Church, because she was kind of a lay person that just kind of wandered and was not really a nun, but took vows of poverty and some other things like that. But she challenged the authority at the time. And so just this idea of challenging what is the conceived notions of how one should be and how something should be interpreted is very important in this music that we're playing. That this early music, a lot of it comes down to us today, and you have these a lot of schools and a lot of performers and professionals say that the music should be played a certain way, whereas and we get that from like the classical music culture with like Beethoven and this urtext, where you would play a certain piece a certain way. But in reality, this early music was open to a lot of improvisation, and it was part of the performance practice to change the music, to add notes, to make your own arrangements. And so that's what you'll hear that in Amy's voice. Anytime she'll sing another verse, she'll add ornaments, or even in the first song, Isabelle, I added little divisions, little notes between the notes. And this kind of free form, freedom, and just kind of playfulness in early music is not really something that most people think about when they think about classical or Western art music. So we'll hear that in this next piece. And this next piece, I play a little Francesco interlude, and you can hear the beginnings of a fugue, where we have sort of like a canon. We have one melody that starts, and then it's echoed in another voice and continued along, and then you have it echoed again.
There is a secret place, a radiant sanctuary, as real as your own kitchen, more real than that, constructed of the purest elements, overflowing with 10,000 beautiful things, worlds within worlds, forests, rivers. This magnificent refuge is inside you. Enter. Shatter the darkness that shrouds the doorway. Thank you.
even though she was burned at the stake, they published her work, or saved her work.
Yeah, her work, and that's why she was burned. She refused to withdraw her book from, not circulation, or to make certain edits. But she was, I don't know if she was around Meister Eckhart, but she kind of influenced the what later came the heresy of the free spirit, and so there were a lot of like high church priests and bishops that were kind of on her side, but she was burned in Paris. She was taken down to Paris and burned at the stake there. So I think, I'm not sure about this, but the heresy of the free spirit really pulled a lot of their ideas from her writings, and so that it may be one of the reasons why her book survived. And to end this set of Spanish songs, we have some more light songs about pastoral scenes and a gallant knight that rides well, which can be taken to mean a few different things. And what's also fascinating is the way that all of this stuff intertwines and connects. So this this is, even though this music was for Vihuela and was a result of the Spanish Inquisition and the kind of divide between the Catholic and the Arab culture at the time. We have Enriquez Valderrabano was a priest that published his book. It was The Song of the Sirens, and then another book was entitled Orfenica Lyra. So we have these books that are published where they're citing mythical references. And so this mythology and mysticism and just kind of fascination with the unknown or things beyond is really apparent in most of this music. This is some lighter stuff.
It's hard to find in the Spanish the light stuff, so here you go.
Just do this one.
That's a choice.
Todos son de esta serana del billar de Avilazón. Todos son de esta serana del billar de Avilazón.
Gardia, de Gardia.
10-minute break, and then we'll be back with our second set. Thank you.
Oh, Dominic, can you maybe explain what was heretical about train of thought? Just make it a little clearer what was heretical.
Okay.
The church found it so objectionable. What it was, and then why the church reacted the way it did. That would be interesting.
Yeah, okay.
If it works for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, yeah, you got to start making it. What's the talking point for that? Otherwise, I...
Well, there's a few other things to think about.
Hi. How's it going, Richard?
Good, good. Thank you. Can you
hold on?
Mostly Richmond Hall. Sundays, Fridays, Tuesday, Lisa lost her Tuesday at 10? He hasn't
under the water, so it's at a house.
Well,
this is my mom. Hi.
Oh.
No, thank you.
A beautiful building. It was a Sikh temple.
I wonder. Okay, it's Granby. I did a little ceremony with you, but I don't know if it's the same house years ago.
It's hard to talk about this. Fantastic. We're fantastic.
Well, my apartment is lived beneath. I've never been in.
Oh, cat.
It's for them to...
I don't think so. but I know where he is, but I'm always exhausted on Tuesday. Two long days of work.
Yeah. He was worried about it.
Yeah,
the train. Yeah, she's saying,
Are you dancing?
I mean, just to happen to any kind of
I would go.
Some herbal teas, plus orange chamomile.
Thank you very much.
15 minutes. Yeah, I mean, it's
not easy. Right? In the winter, I can get kids a high
roll. I've done one class in India. It was a lot of fun.
Was it with Michelle?
No, it was in the city.
Oh, okay. Well,
thank you.
She studied it. You know, I don't know. It's at a time when I can do it.
Good.
Yeah.
No, maybe Dominic didn't judge right when I told Dominic like last year. And right now I'm like going to be a step out and shit.
I've done it twice with my mask on.
Yeah, that other one was from 1986, uh-huh. And this was built in 2011, I think.
Was it made for you?
This one, yes. The other one, no.
I noticed that you didn't play those upper strings hardly.
Yeah, that's because the music that we were playing, those upper strings weren't invented yet at the time. But they were for this music, so you'll hear them.
Okay.
Here.
So back in the Baroque period, which these next pieces are from, early Baroque, they would have whole orchestras of lutes, maybe 20 lutes and some various sizes. So you can imagine having maybe 5 or 6 of these long things in an orchestra pit, playing some Handel opera or something. You really had to negotiate the length of the thing here. So,
what's the difference between that and the other one?
So this one actually is longer. What, 6 inches longer?
Maybe a little more.
It actually is a later lute. Is that right?
Yeah, so this is a theorbo, which is a theorbo lute, similar to the arch lute. It's a lute with an extended neck, but this one is in a lower range, and that's noticeable because it's longer. So it's longer, which means you could have kind of looser, thicker strings on it, producing a lower note, like the way a grand piano. That shape of a grand piano, the really short side is where the high strings are, the high notes are, the short strings, and the deeper side is where the long notes are. So this theorbo, uh, an octave that I could tune to whatever mode or scale I'm playing in. And then I have strings that I play on the fretboard. And the unique thing about this, that the highest note is in the middle there. And then the top two strings, which like on a guitar, on a lute, or most other stringed instruments that you go from low to high, they're tuned down an octave. That's because of the string length. And you'll hear sort of a early opera kind of style, and that's what this instrument was developed for.
Il mio cuore rivolgo sola sala bella innocente dove giunger non può ragioni sole e quel che pioverà Eta crisi al mio mal formanti e bene e che per mia cagione provi mai il mio bene going to skip the Dolce il Tormento, sorry about that, and go right on to the last piece. And this also is by Barbara Strozzi, L'amante segreto, so the secret lover.
So I have a short little prelude to this one that is a passacaglia or a chaconne, which is you probably heard it in the last piece. It's a compositional process by which the composer creates melodic material over a recurring bass. So the bass won't change. You'll hear it in the vocal piece. We have four notes. I'm just playing four notes and the same four notes over and over again. It's the instrumentalist's job to kind of create some interest when the singer isn't, or it's just to create some space for the singer to add ornaments. So
and
this
actually, in that it's actually opposite of the Spanish Christmas, where you heard me kind of doing a very simple melody and Dominic kind of doing a lot of stuff underneath. And then now I get to do the fun stuff, the little, you know, intricate things. And he's more of an accompanist. And that signals a change from the Renaissance to the Baroque, where the singer was more featured and the language was more featured, as opposed to the more intricate instrumental of the Renaissance. Mm-hmm.
Voy a morir.
thank you. If you'd like to see the instrument, welcome to come up or meet the baby.
Thank you.
Dominic has some music over here for you to look at on your way out. The donation bowl is still open for more contents. And thank you so much for coming tonight, and we look forward to seeing you at another event here at Mini Grass.
Thank you.